wife Agnes produced the program. Brian Reznor announces, John Fox in Sydney, Australia, is the chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains...
This is the Quality News Network. 6,000 Sunni Arab residents of Iraq will join a security pact with American forces in what U.S. military officials term a critical step in securing any remaining escape routes for members of al-Qaeda flushed from extremist strongholds. The new alliance is being called the single largest volunteer mobilization since the war began. In response to this week's Middle Eastern Peace Conference in Annapolis, Maryland, Iran's top leader predicts the demise of Israel as a nation and calls the summit a failure. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was not invited to the conference. He says no agreement, though, is complete without inclusion of Hamas leaders concerning any future Palestinian state. President Bush, meantime, is asking for the world's support for future peace negotiations between Israeli and Palestinian leaders. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas are both on their way back home after reaching an historic agreement to settle differences concerning a future Palestinian state by late next year. A federal grand jury has begun hearing testimony in the September killing of 17 Iraqi citizens by Blackwater private security guards. In addition, the families of several victims have filed a federal lawsuit against Blackwater USA. U.S. airstrikes over eastern Afghanistan killed at least 14 local members of a road crew working on a highway. U.S. military authorities say the bombings were based on faulty intelligence. President Pervez Musharraf officially left as head of the Pakistani army today. He'll be sworn into his second term as president tomorrow. Martial law remains in effect. Talks about the future of Kosovo have broken off between Serbian and Kosovar leaders meeting in Austria. Both sides threatening violence should Kosovo declare its independence next month. CT scans are putting more Americans at increased cancer risk. A new study published in the New England Journal of Medicine indicates that in a few decades, as many as 2% of all cancers in the U.S. may be caused from radiation from CT scans being given now. Some medical experts say the statistics may be overly alarming, but efforts are being made to curb the diagnostic X-ray use in children and young adults. You're listening to the Quality News Network, back after this message.
Remember when the name on the door said it all? In today's world, it's the website that defines a company's image. For better or worse, a company's presence on the internet is a vital factor in how it keeps existing customers and attracts new clients. Byte Technology of Monterey is a leader in a new approach to web design. Byte designs a new site based on the mission, purpose, character, and indeed the energy of their clients. Byte is particularly successful in presenting their client's name to the global internet community because they approach the design with a clear, defined process. By fully understanding the client's business, motivation, and operation, they are able to translate the company's critical values into the new website. In addition to original design, Byte works with clients to update their website to reflect changes in target markets, products and services, and the business climate. Byte Technology. See what they're about at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Under public and political pressure, R.J. Reynolds has agreed to stop advertising its tobacco products in newspapers and magazines by next year. In Wisconsin, federal prosecutors have abandoned an effort to force Amazon.com to release the names of thousands of people who buy used books online. That after a federal judge ruled customers have a constitutional right to keep private their reading habits. The FCC has rejected a plan to place the country's cable TV companies under tighter government control. The plan would have forced greater program diversity upon cable stations. The publisher of the Wall Street Journal, Dow Jones, saying it plans to sell 23 daily and weekly newspapers it owns in seven states. Dow Jones is to be acquired by Rupert Murdoch's News Corp. That's within the next few weeks. Consumer confidence fell this month to its lowest level in 2 years, analysts blaming record-setting oil prices and the ever-deepening housing slump. Meantime, Americans spent $733 million online Monday for holiday gifts, and that's a 21% increase over this time last year. Light sweet crude oil trading at $90.62 a barrel at today's close of Wall Street. The Dow way up 331 points to end at 13,289. NASDAQ up 82 points. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
And talk with myself and to the guest. I'll be giving out the, I'm sorry, there was a strange delay in the headsets. I'm all better now. I think I can handle it now. I'll be giving out the toll-free line number in just a few moments and introducing our guest. You'll find the information about the show at strictlyconfidentialradio.com. That's the show site. You'll find links to all of the guests as well as to the audio archives from past shows, as well as to the chat room, which I'm in right now as we speak. You'll locate the audio archives, as I said, and you'll find the Head On Radio Network main site where you can find out about all of the progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, of which I am only a very small part. There are also links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4, Head On. That's 877, the number 4, Head On. That translates into 877-443-2366. That's 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that and save the studio a buck. And that's area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333. And that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. And I normally try to check the email during the break. Well, if you've been a listener to this show for a while, you know that we've had doctors and we've had lawyers, we've had rabbis, we've had priests, we've had bishops, we've had transgendered, we've had DJs, we've had singers, but never, never have we had on this show a for real, honest-to-God drag queen. Well, we do tonight. And it's not just any old run-of-the-mill drag queen, I need to tell you. This particular drag queen is the former Miss Gay Indiana University, the former Miss Gay Allen County, the former Miss Indiana Show Queen. She's the first queen to have her own FM radio show in Fort Wayne, Indiana. She is the current reigning Miss After Dark. And her persona is, as she says, a combination of her mother, her grandmother, Suzanne Sugarbaker from Designing Women, and Divine. You've got to love a combination like that. You can't just bring someone like Miss Delalicious onto the show without an intro. Hit it, Bob.
I spent some thinking hard.
and the waiting is over. Welcome to the show, Miss Delalicious.
Thank you very, very much, Peter. I'm very excited to be here.
I am excited to have you here, indeed. Bob, there's a severe echo in my headset. If you could do something about that, please. I can't speak. Bad of an echo. Can you hear me okay, Della?
Yes, I can.
Excellent. Della, you amazed me. You just simply amazed me. I've got to tell you, in looking through all of the information about you and the music and the things that you've done, you just blow me away. How in the world did you get started doing this?
Well, you know, I actually did the contest to get my own radio show as a lark. They had on their ad talking about how we'll take anybody. You can be this, that, you know, we'll even take a drag queen. And I said, well, hell, I'll go to the mall. And I did. And then history just was made.
I'll be darned. And so apparently you were up against a lot of other people for this radio show, weren't you?
Yeah, I was up against about 800 people.
That's amazing.
Maybe it was 80. I don't remember. That was
funny cocktail. Did they all send in voice tapes and that sort of thing?
No, it was actually a live thing. And I had just had surgery on my face. I had I called it my ovary. I had a cyst on my forehead that they popped off of me. And so I went in there with stitches and pan stick on and ended up winning the thing.
I'll
but
be darned. Did you do
it in live and talked?
And did you, were you in full drag when you did the audition?
I was in full high whore drag. I had hair
of
Jesus and eyelashes. Well, I like to say that I'm 5'17". But I'm 6'5".
My
and hair and lashes and everything, yeah. I'm a whole lot of women when it comes to it.
That's just amazing. Were they a little bit horrified? Were they a little bit like, oh my God, like it really is a totally drag queen?
Well, yeah, we got a lot of that kind of Buffy effect, but it was more the other contestants, because they're all trying to shine, and when you have on rhinestones and sequins, you don't have to shine that much to just really set yourself apart. So I was excited by that. But
What did you do during your first encounter with them? Did you have it planned? Was it just off the wall? What happened there?
I flew by the seat of my pantyhose. It was just one thing after another. I didn't have anything planned out. I believe I called myself a big cross-dressing pig in a wig. I think that was what I called it. And now that I think about that, I shouldn't have said that. But you know.
Well, Della, from what I'm reading here, you took that station single-handedly from, what was it, number 9 to number 3 in the Arbitron ratings, and this was morning drive time. Am I correct?
Yes, that is correct. And I actually beat Bob and Tom, which is a nationally syndicated radio show. They bring comedians and all that. We beat Bob and Tom.
I'll be darned.
Because we hit number 1 by 1 point.
Well, this was a hip-hop station.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how you handle that, because you know the hip-hop lyrics aren't always very kind to us.
Well, that is true. That is true, very much so. But, you know, I found that the people were really forgiving. And I played myself as a novelty. I said, you know, I'm just kind of like a piece of that fake dog poo that you pick up at the store. I try to be a novelty, but I try to be something a little different. And because I know who I am, and know where I've come from, and I know where I'm going, I think people really responded well to that. I was on stage in front of 10,000 people at our big shizzo, where we had Ludacris and Stinky and a whole bunch of other hip-hop acts. And the whole place went nuts. Mind you, I was wearing white patent leather thigh-high platform boots, but still, the whole place
my stars.
Absolutely insane.
So did you just like marched out on the stage? Did you yell something, or was it just a visual? They just blew him away.
Oh, it was. I did it all in just one shock. I stood backstage and they started bringing us all on, and I just announced myself and ran up on the stage, and the whole place was on its feet. I felt like a rock star.
No
doubt. Once in my life, I was a rock star.
But what a thrill that had to be.
Exactly. And even like Ludacris, who is one of hip-hop's shining stars, he and Missy Elliott have done a lot of collaborations. He's done a lot of things. He was there with somebody who's on his record label, Shauna, who she's had a couple hits out, and she loved my nails, and I drove them all over the city, but he was just enamored by me as well as anybody else, and he actually had the dressing room that Cher was in the week before.
Uh-huh.
So I walked in there, and I could just smell all the old woman and glitter, and there was Ludacris.
Yes, yes.
We just had a great time. He was just a wonderful, wonderful person, and I thought it was amazing that, you know, I thought, my God, I'm going to get beat in the face, and please don't break my silicone, and no, it was wonderful.
Well, I would have been very concerned, too, and throughout your history there at the station, you had to do a number of remote broadcasts. Were any of those kind of scary?
Well, some that were better than others. I was a little more prompt than I wanted to be on one. So I spent my car in front of a Krispy Kreme for an hour and a half waiting on the other people to get there. And touring, they had actually because this was the biggest Krispy Kreme I believe they'd opened, and it's still open, thank God, because I love sugar. They had their corporate people there taking video. And here I was getting a tour in a Liza Minnelli wig with a Krispy Kreme hat on. And I smelled like that glaze for a week and a half. It was horrible. I kept trying.
Oh, no doubt.
There was one time when, and you know, mind you, being 6'5", I kind of stand out. I don't think I'm trying to be all fishy swell. I'm trying to look like just out there, larger than life. And
yes.
He did a remote for, it was a gas promotion. And this old guy, he must have been somewhere between 90 and death, was working at the gas station. And I went in to start setting up for the remote. We were doing gas at $1.07 a gallon. And he walks by and goes, well, you're a pretty young woman, but my God, you're tall. And I thought, oh, my God, Pathball, what the hell? No. He just kept looking at me, and I just kept walking away. So, like, oh, an Ethiopian free buffet. It was just horrible. It just kept staring at me.
My
but that
stars.
Was not as bad as it got. No, actually, I tell a lie. There was one time, there's a place just north where I live called Auburn, and they had their DeKalb County Fair because they're within DeKalb County. And you know, when they're having a county fair, it's not the most metropolitan of areas. Because I don't believe New York has one of those. Well,
yes.
Here we were marching in this parade, and I'm in, like I always say, high whore drag. I had huge hair and big eyelashes and huge red lips, and I'm walking through, waving at the people, and we're all handing out candy. Well, I'm trying to hand out candy to the kids, and parents won't let their children take candy from me. And I thought, okay, God. I'll eat the candy. So I'm walking through the middle with a sucker in my mouth, and somebody threw a beach ball at my face and screamed, "Go home, faggot."
Oh, geez.
And I thought, you know what, I have more teeth in my mouth than the city does in total, and add to that, my family tries to have branches, so I just walked right down the middle, just waving, going, "I hate you all, I hate you all," just to myself. I figured I'd just smile in the face of adversity.
Well, I love the term high whore drag. Now, that's a new one for me. I thought I'd heard just about everything, but high whore drag. Do you mind if I keep that? I've got to use that from time to time.
Oh, you can use that all you want.
Well, speaking of using things, there's another radio host. His name is Harrison, does a show called Harrison on the Edge. When he starts his show, he begins it with "Hello, honeys," which I've always just loved, but I can't use that because he's already using it. And I figure you're the right person to ask, what is a good hello phrase other than "Good morning, America," and "Good morning, world"? There's got to be something other than "Hello, honeys." Can you help me?
You know, I've always been a big fan of Dame Edna and her puppets. It's awesome. But I do this all the time, Peter. I actually had to type your name down because I'm horrible with names. 98% of my closest friends are Kitty, Sweetie, Honey, and Puss, because I just don't remember their names. So I would just say, well, hey, sweetie. Hey, darling. Hey, kitten.
Kitten,
really
that's
matter.
A good one.
They think you love them.
Hello,
that's all
kitten.
That really matters.
That might work. Hello, kittens might work very well. May I call you Brandon? Do you ever go by Brandon, or is it always Della?
Yes. Well, when I'm at the bar, everybody calls me Della. There was a time when I was Brandon. I remember it well. But no, I'm usually when I'm out, and a lot of times it's to my family's chagrin, because we'll be out having dinner someplace and my family's a little more stuffed shirt than I am. And, the server will walk by, or, just a customer. Oh, hey, Della, how are you, girl? And I'm just like, oh, I'm fine, how are you? And you just see their turtlenecks just come higher and higher on their neck.
That's so funny.
Their face. But no, actually, there's been times that I don't remember what my name is because people keep calling me Della. And actually, from the same time when I got this, I'm going on in length, but this from the same time that when I got hit in the face with a beach ball, I was the first drag queen to be in the Three Rivers Festival Parade, which is in Fort Wayne. It's a big festival because we have three rivers here, so they call it the Three Rivers Festival. Anywho, my little sisters, or they were my half-sisters, and they're on my father, I came out to him, he said, do you think I'm stupid? There's a video of me at 6 singing What's Love Got to Do with It.
But, oh, my stars, that's priceless.
In a rugby shirt and
underwear.
That's
priceless.
I sashayed out of my mother's womb, I just know it. But he did not want my sisters to know about my lifestyle. So I just kind of keep it quiet. Well, they end up at the festival, and I'm walking down the street and waving at people, looking like a big old gay float. And my sisters are jumping up and down, going, Brandon, Brandon, we knew it was you. Well, I was glad I had on my big Liz Claiborne's because my eyes just teared up, and I used the waterproof mascara, and I was so touched by that. And then that year for my birthday, they made a little homemade card for me. And in big letters it said Della, and in little letters it said Brandon, and it was spelled wrong. I thought, well, I guess that should be my name for life.
Well, that's funny. I need to tell you that we are posting the link to your pictures in the chat room. We're using the link with the hometown AOL. So I wanted to point out to the listeners who are not on the web who may be listening to this later, if you'll stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and just scroll down to today's calendar date, you'll see a link there for pictures, because I know everybody's dying to see what you look like. So I just wanted to let you know that we are doing that.
The link to MySpace, I just uploaded pictures, and it's under the Tulip's 50th anniversary album, if you're a big MySpacer, which I am. And in it is my rendition of Britney Spears. I'm not sure if you got a chance to see those pictures.
No, did you just do that today?
I did it a couple days ago, but keep in mind that I say that I weigh 190 because the needle hits it on the way up on the scale, and I figured, why not just take advantage of this poor, poor, poor woman who spends $7 million a month by letting my stomach hang out of my pantyhose and doing jumping jacks with pasties on to her new song, Give Me More, while eating pepperoni.
Della, let me ask you this. We've had more than one occasion where we've had guests who have grown up in an atmosphere where there was a lot of, fundamentalist-type churches, sometimes Baptists, sometimes not. I understand you grew up Catholic, but nonetheless, these people were so guilt-tripped that they went into the ex-gay groups, these phony recovery centers where they come out and, like,
came into the light and all that.
All that crap, I'm just wondering, how did you manage to escape that? What kind of Catholic church was it, and how did your family, you must have felt very supported.
Well, I do feel very supported. Actually, I'm very blessed to have the family that I have and the support system that I had growing up. Like I said, when I came out to my father, he said, well, you think I'm stupid? And at the time, he was paying for my school, he was paying my rent, he was paying my utilities, he was paying everything. And I just thought, oh, God, Dad, don't cut me off. And, financial is one thing, but to have the emotional support, even though it some days it's a little more touchy-feely than others, I am very blessed in the fact that my friends, half my friends were gay anyways in high school, and my mother's been very supportive. She and I go shopping at Catherine's together. She actually was just called to ask if she could borrow a pair of pantyhose for tomorrow because she's all out. And my grandmother, both are very supportive. Actually, the one, she was trying to get it out of me before I was ready to say anything. And she goes, well, I just haven't been feeling well. I said, well, what's wrong? She goes, my stomach kind of queer. And
I was laughing.
She's the same woman that, this is the same woman that when her sister was talking about how horrible it was that they were allowing gay marriage in Vermont, she looked at her sister dead in the eyes and said, quite frankly, I don't give a good goddamn where they poke it. that's the kind of support system come from. They're very laid back.
How old were you when that? How old were you? Do you think when that was said?
I think I was 18.
So you'd see, it's just so interesting to me because Indiana and even Fort Wayne is not really known as being wide open, and I mean it's kind of a conservative part of the country. So
oh,
I was figuring they would be
state.
Yeah, and so I was figuring they'd be all like totally freaked out.
Well, it wasn't. Well, my father was born and raised in Germany, so we have a very European thing going on. My grandmother on the other side came over from Canada and in Newfoundland, which that's very laid back there. And we also have the attitude where we don't get, at least most of us, is when it comes to like religion and what the Bible says, we know what's right and what's wrong. We don't need a book to tell us. And certainly something that's been so looked at and studied and interpreted, where you can have somebody like Fred Phelps looking at something saying God loves all, and he just says, well, see that right there, if you mix the letters around, it says God hates fags, and there's a .com after it. And that's, we don't get as involved in the religion to lose the message of the religion, of the spirit.
I see. Della, let me ask you about this. You were with the radio station for a couple of years, but and I don't know why, but for some reason they let you go. What in the name of God were they thinking? Was there some sort of a big blow-up, or what happened there?
There really wasn't. I had been waiting for the other shoe to drop for a while. We went into a meeting, and the owner of the station, he came in from Florida, and he said how ratings falling, and maybe it was the Ellen thing, maybe I'm just too gay. Whereas a couple weeks beforehand, we were doing an advertisement for a amusement park, and it was for the Thrill Dragster or Top Thrill Dragster or something, the roller coaster. And my part was just to say, but I'm the dragster. And he kept going, come on, fag it up. And I'm like, excuse me? And I made everybody leave the room, and I told that little man right then and there that I may be many things, but I'm a person foremost. And I'm not to be made to feel like I need to be anything other than what and who I am.
Good for
well,
you.
They ended up calling me into the office on a Friday. I'll never forget. It was June 3rd, and they called me in on a Friday afternoon to the big office, and they said, well, we're just going to have to let you go. And I said, why is that? And they said, well, we just don't see you fitting in with the changes we're making. And I was the only change. They got rid of me for the same reason they hired me.
Exactly.
And I never, threw a flag in anybody's face. I was always trying to be, yes, I'm a drag queen. Yes, I'm gay. Yes, I'm a lot of things. But I'm also intelligent. I am a divinely wonderful person. I'm funny. And God damn it, I'm pretty. And they didn't appreciate all of that that came up to work with.
That's wonderful. That's remarkable that you did that. So please tell me that the radio station went down the tubes after that.
I would love to say that actually the people that own that station bought up a couple more in town, and now they're trying to get with the gay bars to who I work for to
uh-huh.
get them to start advertising. And I told them, I said, these people do not like gay people. They just want your money. Go with their competition.
Uh-huh.
I felt like Dorothy Zbornak on the Golden Girls when they
uh-huh.
tried to scare them into getting a security system. I said, oh, no, we're going with your competition.
Uh-huh.
Because
I think.
It's just one thing. It's like we have this situation going on now where somebody owns a huge, huge set of nightclubs wants to open up a gay club. And I'm thinking, for years you didn't want gays in your club, and now you want our money. No. Not at all.
Good for you. Yeah.
So I hope to see them fail. I'd love to be the one to pour the last bucket on the drowning ship, but I try to be a little more kind-hearted than that to the bastards, and I say that in a loving Christian way.
What is the gay scene like in Fort Wayne? Is it are there lots of clubs, or are there lots
we
of...
We have three main clubs, two of which are owned by the company that I work for. And we have stuff going on every night of the week. Fridays and Saturdays are, of course, busy. Tuesday, like last night, we had male dancers, and it was quite busy out. We had we always have wonderful, wonderful times when we're out, and it's just new faces. a lot of people come in for conferences because Fort Wayne is the capital of 10,000 things involving restaurants and, you know, any kind of food substance. They run it through us practically first as a test run. So we have a lot of out-of-town visitors. So it's always, the people always rotate through. And so it's always a fresh face every night of the week. And on the weekends, we just get together and party and have a great time. Our Pride Fest, we had 3,000 people at.
Wow.
For a town of 300,000. And I don't think it's a bad thing. And you'd be surprised on how accepting and how big the gay community is in Fort Wayne.
That's amazing.
We have a gay couple that own a bed and breakfast in the middle of the historic district. And, of course, you have your florists and your hairdressers. And everybody knows. Nobody really worries. My car's been hit once with an egg. And I thought, you bastard, why don't you throw some cheese and sausage? We'll make an omelet.
Well, tell me about Fort Wayne. I'm not really familiar with the geography in that area. Is Fort Wayne a major city with miles and miles and miles of country around it? In other words, do you tend to draw people in from the rural areas?
We do. We get a lot of people. Well, we're close to Ohio. We're about 45 minutes from Ohio. So we get a lot of people in from Ohio. We have surrounding cities that people come in from for 50 miles. We are the second largest city in Indiana and the seventh largest city in the country.
I see.
We bring in people from farms and people from cities and people from in between. And I'm surprised some days not to see a cow walk into the bar, but sometimes that's just me looking in a mirror. I just don't know what's going on half the time, but I know that we bring in people from all over the world.
That's funny. I lived in Portland, Oregon for a number of years, and it was the only major city with, you know, miles and miles of country. We used to see, like, potato farmers and all these people come in today. It's kind of a riot that way. Tell us about what Miss After Dark is. What's that about? We all want to know about Miss After Dark.
Well, After Dark is the name of the main gay club in Fort Wayne. And I was very fortunate to win the title of Miss After Dark. And that was, a couple months ago. So they crowned me as their winner. I came out in a gown and my feet were killing me. I was stuffed into five inch stilettos. And you get this much cystic pork fat on that little kind of a heel and it was crunching the foot together. I was in horrible pain. And then I did my Britney Spears and ate a cheeseburger because at that moment in time I wasn't on my new diet, so I could eat a cheeseburger, and did jumping jacks and went into rehab and all this other stuff. And at the end of the night, I ended up winning by pretty much a landslide.
That's marvelous.
So it's a bar title, I actually made a mix of Britney Spears' Gimme More, and then it went into a version of Let's Get Physical by Goldfrapp. And then
yes,
it went
definitely
into Crazy, and Oops, I Did It Again when I shaved my wig.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Then
it went to the last snippet of Amy Winehouse's Rehab.
That sounds like a lot of fun. What is your typical week like? What do you do? Are there shows every night? How do you handle all this?
Well, I bartend on Monday nights when we have karaoke at After Dark. And then through the week, I do my schoolwork. I'm at the University of Phoenix. And then when I'm done with my schoolwork, I go out to the bar for a drink, and then I come back home. And, there's stuff to do every night of the week. I'm always out. I'm constantly somewhere. And then I work on the weekends, either DJing or doing shows, or I'll travel out of town. I'll go to Chicago. I'll go to Detroit. It's just Indianapolis. You know, we're very close to pretty much everything. We're 3 hours from Chicago. We're an hour and a half from Indy. We're, 3 hours from Detroit. I can go skip over to Ohio if I want to. I pretty much do whatever I want to because I think I've earned it.
Well,
my old cranky age.
Well, I think you're only in your 20s, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. But, you know, they say you're only as old as you feel, and right now I'm 147. I'm actually turned 28.
I see. Well, you're just a kid. My God, you've got worlds to conquer, I'm sure.
Well,
I am trying.
Yes, tell me.
I'm curious about, I DJed, this is years ago, I don't do that anymore, in some gay clubs out in Portland. And, you know, DJs always had, you had to buy your own music, you had to buy your own records, you know, and the, you know, that you made money at the club, but the clubs didn't. In other words, what I'm wondering, the work that you do, these outfits are not cheap. I mean,
right.
I'm just wondering, do the clubs, like, subsidize that in any way? Or because that's just an incredible expense. I cannot imagine the amount of money you have spent on clothes.
Well, there's a certain amount of money you get as a booking fee that is first and foremost. But everything else you get, you know, is tips, and tips are just gravy. You'd also be surprised what you can do with a bolt of Dollar Yard fabric at the Walmart.
I see.
You'd be you can get really creative and make a gorgeous gown for, you know, $7.
I'll be damned. Because some of the outfits I've seen you in and some of the pictures are just stunning. And I just started seeing the dollar signs roll by.
Especially when I worked on the radio, that I'd just go all out when I go shopping. And I'd keep all those receipts, and I'd use it as business expenses. Because it was in my contract that I had to be in face at every public appearance.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of that stuff paid for itself. You know, I got the money back from it. But as far as club owners, unless you do a like a big production number, you don't usually get your money back on outfits. Just get that back and by wearing the outfits, and, you know, people tip you, and it finally makes its own money.
Well, it sounds a little bit like DJing in gay clubs. It's really a labor of love more than anything else.
Oh yes. Well, the thing I like about DJing though is I'm a very digital person. Because I could bring the records, I could bring the CDs, but that just takes entirely too much time and too much effort on my part. So they bought a computer and they got the software and they buy the music for me and I just mix it all up and hit play. And if somebody wants to hear something, I throw it in.
Ah, so you're DJing now. That's very interesting. Now, you're going to laugh at this. When I DJed, none of that existed. I used actual vinyl.
Mm-hmm. You break your back for an hour.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The crates were the old milk crates. You know them.
Exactly.
You know them. How long does it take you to get ready to do one of these things? Is it like an all-day affair?
No. Actually, I was laughing about this last weekend. They had the Mr. After Dark pageant, and the girls are backstage and glue on hair to their face, and I'm running to the ladies' room to shave the hair off mine. I thought we could just, you know, replace it with each other. But it's taken me 10 minutes, and it's taken me an hour and a half. It all really depends on how much time I have. Because if I'm in a rush, it's done. And it always looks so much better when you rush, too.
Really?
I try to be as late as possible, yes.
I see.
And I would say 45 minutes, generally, between when I put the lotion on my face to when I put the last pin in my hair.
Well, earlier we were speaking, you mentioned, we were talking about drag, or drag race, I think was the term. It might have come up. Was there really a drag race with people in drag?
Yeah, I had a couple queens that were here in town. They got together with me, and we raced around the busiest intersection of the city, back and forth. I ended up winning just because I cheated. I made them run all the way across, and I just kind of stepped on the street and stepped back. I said, okay, that's lap one. I was not about to run and break my leg, my neck right in front of a Borders. I'm sorry. No, ma'am, I will not.
Was this part of a promo or something?
It was for the Indy 500, Memorial Day weekend, and we decided to have a drag race. So I was out there running back and forth during rush hour, the morning rush hour, people honking, bringing me coffee. I was sitting there munching a donut at one time. I'm seeing a trend now with Krispy Kremes in my life. But just running back and forth across the main intersection in front of one of the malls in town, skipping across the Borders, yeah, that was the drag race.
Well, you had a birthday recently, did you not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the 19th of November. I had celebrated turning 21 again.
What was that like? You were at a club, were you?
Yes. We had a huge party, and people started buying me shots of 151, and then I ended up at a Steak and Shake in high whore drag with a couple other drag queens and a friend of mine from Indianapolis. And this is actually a very funny story. The people who were in the restaurant, and it was like 2, 3 in the morning, they were sitting there pointing and laughing, and I had gotten a little deep in my cups, so I felt like I was 10 foot tall and bulletproof. I said, oh, they have never seen a queer before. They've never seen a man in a dress. What the hell's their problem? And they kept laughing and staring and pointing. And so the waitress comes over and she goes, ma'am, what can I get you? And I said, I'll have taters and mustard.
Jesus.
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. And I was reminded about that. I also skipped off my diet and had a bowl of hot fudge and a spoon.
Oh, my stars. And you were surrounded by your friends then?
Yes. Yes, I was. And that's one thing that I don't really get scared when I'm out in public in drag, because for one thing, it's not that I'm trying to be a woman and I'm trying to be so demure and, you know, I'm not getting any sexual kick out of it, and I'm not looking for somebody that gets a sexual kick out of it. I am there as an entertainer and as a figure, as a personality, be it on the radio, just be it as a citywide celebrity. I'm just trying to be a personality.
I'll be darned. Well, do your parents live nearby, or did you actually grow up in Fort Wayne?
I grew up in Fort Wayne, and then we moved down to Tennessee, Hendersonville, Tennessee. We lived there for a year, and then moved back up, because we couldn't get enough of the city that never naps.
How old were you when you were in Nashville?
I was 10.
Ah, just a little
10
boy.
10 years old. My father, we moved down there for his job. And then the whole thing went belly up, so we moved back up. And that was actually when I was living in Hendersonville. I remember taking out the trash, and Johnny Cash lived 2 blocks away from us, off of the Johnny Cash
uh-huh.
Parkway. And Conway Twitty's grandson went to school with me, and I took out the trash wearing one of my mother's blue gowns and a big hat and red lips. We call it Dog Dick Red now. Just bright red. And
painted
my nails and put on blue eyeshadow. I look like some kind of hussy. I look like Anna Nicole's cousin. And I brought out the trash, and my father pulled up. And he started screaming at me. He goes, Brandon, how could you? If you want to dress like a girl, then I'll buy you girls' clothes. And now I'm thinking that's not a bad deal, because I've seen some gowns that are kind of expensive. And I think I'm going to try and remind him about that deal that he made to me 18 years ago.
Uh-huh. That's funny. Well, did you go home for Thanksgiving?
Yes, we had a very small get-together with just my aunt's family and my family. My nephew was there. He was just born in October. And it was very, very quiet. I'm not used to it because, you know, we're from a big Catholic family. My mom's one of 7, and one of her brothers has, I think, 98 children or something, starting a football team. And they were all off their own respective families Thanksgiving, so it was very small. It was very quiet. I had a friend of mine there. They wanted to start watching football. I heard the word tight end and passed out, and that was the end of it.
Oh, Jesus. Brandon, what was it like working with the co-hosts at the radio station? Had they been there for a while when you joined the station, and were they, like, in shock when you first came in? What was it like integrating with an on-air team?
Well, there was one guy that worked at the station who everybody else loved me, and I don't blame them at all, because I am just that wonderful of a person, and I am so humble at the same time. But there was one guy at the station who he would just say some of the stupidest things. He came up to me one day. We were out at a remote at a bar, and he goes, you know, I hate faggots, but you're kind of cool. And I was like, well, thanks, darling. You're an asshole.
Oh.
And he goes, well, you know, I just, if there's a fight, I have your back. I'm right behind you. And I'm thinking, I don't want you behind me. I don't want you anywhere near me. Please walk
mm-hmm.
away. And he was, I think, one of the reasons that I did get let go, because he started getting a lot of power within the company.
Ah, yes. So the friendly overtures were phony. You know, it's funny that people can feel so comfortable even this day and age to say things like that. They just
I think it's hilarious. I don't understand how people get the gall, and where they think that, you know, even saying something rotten about somebody just based on their religion, their creed, their gender, their sexual orientation, whatever it is, that is so middle school. And kids, grow up. I mean, seriously.
So apparently you're off tonight. You don't have to do anything. I'm glad you found we had a night that we could do this. What do you work every night? How does your schedule work?
Well, some days it seems like I work every night. And there are some weeks when I have all this free time. I can't stand myself, so I go out to the bar. Actually, today, I usually have Wednesdays off, and this is kind of like my day to relax from all the craziness of the week. And today I get to be on the radio, so it's, you know, that's just gravy for me. That's icing on the cake that I can't eat on my diet.
Well, do the clubs have like dressing rooms at the clubs where all of your are in one like a dressing room sort of a thing like you'd see in the movies? Or I see.
Yeah, it's a big, you know, it's a big room with full of mirrors all on all the walls and lighting. And a rack to hang up your clothes, and you'll
it's
fit
got
pretty
to
much
be
any
hoot.
Place.
It's got to be just a major hoot. I would just so like to hear an audio tape of what y'all are saying back there. It has to be hysterical. Do you just come out of there rolling out laughing some nights?
There are some days that we don't want to do the show because we're having so much fun back in the dressing room. We don't even
want to
leave.
Imagine.
And there are some that are singers, they get into town and we just get to talking and nobody wants to do a thing but sit back there and have a cocktail. And we just want to invite everybody back in to chat with us. It's like The View, really, but with testicles.
And with better hair.
Yes, much better, except for Barbara. She has some good hair. And Whoopi's dressed fierce, but otherwise.
Well, there had to be some last-moment catastrophes that you've witnessed over the years, you know, just before someone's about to go on the show, that something desperate goes wrong. You know, wigs fall off, girdles break. You know, any number of things.
Oh, there's been a lot with costume malfunctions. Ms.
There you
Janet
go.
Has
that's
nothing
right.
on us. There's been a lot of times when zippers burst and everything just falls to hell. You've had wigs fall apart. There was actually one day I was doing a show in northern Indiana, and I got there late because there was construction right in front of the bar, and I had no clue where the place was. So I get in, I start setting up my makeup, and I just turn on my razor to start shaving my face, and I hear 20-minute show call. So I very quickly start patting down my eyebrows with my glue stick and trying to get my face ready and let the glue stick dry. So I come out for my first number, and I look like Frankenstein's bride. And after I was done with my first number, I went downstairs to start, you know, fixing my face and try to make it look a little better because at the moment I was like death becomes her. And my eyebrow, all the things holding down my eyebrow just came off in one swoop. And I sat there and looked in the mirror and just shaved off my eyebrow. And everyone in that dressing room looked at me and then they looked back at each other and they go, did she just do what I think she did? And I said, yes, ma'am, I did. I just shaved off my eyebrow in front of God and everybody. And that whole day was cursed. Now that I think about it, that whole day was cursed because I had to pull into a Walgreens drive-up pharmacy at 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning because the ring that I had on that had a huge pink stone was cutting off the circulation so badly on my hand that I had to have them cut the whole thing off in the drive-up pharmacy. Because they suggested I go to a hardware store, and I said, oh, no. No, 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 I'm not walking in like this. And they said, well, you could go to the hospital. I said, no, I couldn't, but thank you for trying.
What did they use to, I can't envision this.
They found a pair of pliers. There was a pair of pliers back there, Peter, and they went and put it through the window, and I cut the ring right off my finger.
At 5 a.m.?
At 5 a.m. on a Sunday. Ooh, it was a bad situation.
Well, a lot of the shows that let me get to it in this direction. When I was living in Portland, there was a club there called Darcells, and had been there for many, many years. And it was they had the stage. It wasn't any other kind of a club except go sit down and watch the shows. And it was
still there. A friend of mine just moved out to Portland. Oh well, a friend of mine moved out there and said how much Darcell would just love me, and I need to come out there. And it's a lot of small world.
Yes, What a Small World. And it was very, very popular with straight folks. They would go there on their birthdays, and you know, companies would take, you know, a group of employees out for, you know, a night out, and they would always end up at Darcelle's. It was, and I'll never forget a drag show that I saw there. It was a bunch of girls are on the stage, and they were singing. I cannot remember the song, but it fit in with the music. Suddenly, all the lights went out, and all their boobs had headlights in them. But you didn't know that, and so all the headlights came on. It was a hoot. Do you guys do shows like that, like comedic shows? Because that was I'll never get over those, longer than
there are. I'm actually kind of sad to see where the art of female impersonation is going, because you have so many queens now that they want to just look like they're real girls and wear their things they buy at Charlotte Russe and that they buy at the mall, and they just want to skip around looking cute and kind of, you know, talk in a high-pitched voice and look at me, aren't I just the biggest piece of tuna in the sea? And I think that is just wrong. I think that, you know, back when people were doing fun things like that, and, you know, they made fun of the situation, they made fun of what they were doing, they were just having a great time. I mean, when I do Madonna, I have two construction cones strapped to my chest. I think it's hilarious. And it's even better
perfect
when it's filled with money.
And absolutely.
It's stuff like that. It's stuff like that that I think really makes the show and really entertains the crowd. I think anything other than that is just, that's just, you know, look at me, I'm skipping across the stage and I'm swirling my arm around and grabbing my ankle.
Well, yeah, there's only so much of that a crowd wants to see. I mean, and some of it goes, some of it is, you know, but to do every number like that, I'll never forget another number that I saw in Atlanta, Georgia. Now, that club, I don't remember. This was many hundreds of years ago. But it was a black drag queen, and she did Midnight Train to Georgia with a suitcase. It was hysterical.
All right.
I got to go. You would have loved it. And, you know, drag clubs are just really just a wonderful and an entertaining thing. Do you get a different crowd, or is it seem to be the same crowd, or does it the people, like, circulate through, and how does that work?
It's very much a blend. I mean, there are a lot of people that really appreciate the art that it is, the performance art of it, and, you know, the fun costumes and the hair. I always say the bigger the hair, the closer to God. If you look like a Baptist minister's wife when you step out on that stage, honey, you are doing fine. But they like to see just the art of it. And then there are the people that come to see it because it's something different. And then you have the, like, the bridal parties that come in for parties because they know that they're not going to get hit on. And then you have your panty sniffers that come out there and watch the show and keep jiggling the table. But it's just, it's a revolving cast of the same group, I would say.
I see. Well, you've performed in other cities then?
Yes, I've actually performed as far south as Florida. I performed in a club that was open for, I think, 2 weeks in Orlando.
I'll be darned. Well, that's not too far from here.
I hardly remember any of it, but it was fun when it lasted. And I've performed in Chicago. I've performed in Ohio. I've performed all over Indiana. North Carolina, Winston-Salem, I've been there. New York, I've been all over the place until you get, like, the Rockies.
My
I've
stars, well,
my
New York?
Yes,
well,
New York, actually.
That's the big time. What was that like?
Well, that was just, it's called the tip out, and you just go to see a show, and you decide, you know, you're going to be prettier than the queens on stage, which happens a lot, you'd be surprised. And they said, well, why don't you come on? And I, mind you, I was on the subway singing with a doo-wop group 10 minutes earlier in High Whore Drag.
Oh, no.
And then we get to this club, and they're like, honey, do a number. So I said, I don't think so. I'm not prepared at all. Oh, look, here's a CD track, too.
I love it. That's fabulous. Oh, what wit. That's a great story. And how did you end up doing doo-wop on a subway? What's that all about?
Well, you know how they have, I'm guessing you've been to New York.
Well, actually, no, I never.
It's wonderful.
One day, maybe you and I could go. I'll probably do a lot better with somebody like you.
Peter, I would look forward to that because I've painted that town any color of puce and chartreuse I could. When you're on the subway, you have people that they beg for money. And some people are very standard about it. They just come up and say, hey, I'm hungry, or I'm homeless, or I have a fake leg, give me a dollar. And then you have some people that are a little more creative, like the guy who's on a skateboard. He's actually in the movie Kids, and he's on a skateboard, and he goes through the train banging his cup of coins saying, I have no legs, I have no legs. And then you have the people that come up and tell you jokes, and they think, you know, if they tell you a funny joke and don't spit a lot of plaque on your face from their ever-rotting teeth, that you'll give them a dollar.
Wow.
Which I thought was kind of inventive. Then
yeah.
You have the people that go on there and sing, and they just kind of pass the hat around. Well, these guys were singing some really fun songs from the, you know, 50s and 60s, like My Girl and a lot of Temptations and Four Tops and things. And I just started humming along with them, and they picked me up, big hair and all, knockers out to Jesus, and we started just singing. We rocked out that car for four stops. And I gave them a 20 and went to the bar.
That's hysterical. And so there were lots of other people on the subway at the time?
Yeah, and everybody started singing along. New York, the beauty of that place, not only can you feel the concrete breathing, everything there has a pulse because it's so full of life, but
I just can't imagine.
The people there just don't care. You could be walking down, it's kind of like South Beach, but a lot colder, because people just don't, like when I was in South Beach, this guy was, he had on roller skates, and he had glitter all over the place, and he just, it spread fairy dust everywhere he went. Well, he was doing handstands and splits and flips and just dancing to his own little music, and people just walked by. They didn't care. Now, I was with somebody I work with who, he's from a small town in Indiana, and he kept going, oh, look at him, keep fun. I'm like, no, this is wonderful that somebody can dress the way he's dressed and walk down a very busy thoroughfare in the middle of the day and not get picked on. I said, that's a beautiful thing. So go on ahead, honey. Skip around in your
shoes.
You know, that's New York, business. Same thing. They don't care. You can be walking the street. Julia Roberts can walk down the street. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares.
You can walk by, there's a dead body. Nobody cares. You can walk by and drag. Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. You know, and, well, you know, with maybe the exception of the dead body, you know, that's really the way life should be. People really shouldn't be up at... Yeah, you know, all up in everybody else's business, which is way what's wrong with everybody these days. Everybody, they can't control their own lives. So they feel like, I want to control yours. And that's what the whole thing is. Mm-hmm. You see it all the time.
It's on Entertainment Tonight every night. Thank God Dancing with the Stars is over so we can hear more about Britney Spears. Because I don't have enough things going on in my own life.
Exactly.
And
then
Lord,
there's YouTube.
She's pregnant again.
Every time you turn around, there's something else on YouTube about
her. Oh, you know, I do love the YouTube. I'm a huge fan. Anytime you can see, you know, a squirrel on been stapled to some kind of skis going around on a boat is just fabulous.
Well, you should put and some of your video. Some video?
I'm actually going to put my Britney Spears on YouTube.
Oh, you are? Would you email me when you do that? I'd like to.
Yes, I will.
Would you think you'll be doing that this year?
Well, I have to get in contact with the person who took the video so I can get the video and put it on the internet. But when I do, Peter, I will send you an email. I'll send you a link. It'll all be fabulous. But the I've been saying is, like a friend of mine the other night at the bar, she went to go dance on the pole at the other bar I work at, Babylon, and we have this big dance cage with a pole, and she went to jump on it, and she just bit right there on the dance floor. Busy night, people everywhere just looking. And came up to me, and she goes, did you see what I just did? I said, honey, if it wasn't on YouTube, it didn't happen.
That's too funny.
And
that's
you can
too
do
funny.
That, Peter. You can do that all you want.
That's wonderful. Well, there is a story about you. You mentioned your eyebrows earlier. Is there a story about you with no eyebrows opening the door to the Jehovah's Witnesses?
Yes. There,
please tell.
These things always happen to me, and I don't know why. But I have this dog. He's the most timid thing in the world. But if somebody comes to the door, he just starts barking. Well, I had been out the night before, and I had picked up one or two martinis on the way. And here it was, not even noon, and the gas man was at the door ringing the doorbell. Well, the doorbell's waking me up. The dog's waking me up. I want to wake up. And so I just let him go. Well, a couple minutes later, ring at the doorbell again, and I thought, oh, my God, why are you doing this to me? So I just got up. Now, mind you, I am not any kind of delicate flower, especially when I don't want to wake up, and my hair is going every which way. And I just had on a pair of my George Foreman boxer briefs, and I went up to answer the door with no eyebrows on my head, looking like Uncle Fester with a bad wig on.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
This poor Jehovah's Witness just looked at me and said, I'm Catholic, go away.
Did they think they had seen the devil?
I think so. But he did want to come in for coffee later, so it wasn't all a bad thing.
Well, all's well that ends well. I'm noticing in some of your material, too, that you're also considered to be a writer. And by and large, the things that I've read, the articles that you've written in your blog are really, they're very well written. They're like, it's almost like reading a little novel.
I try to be as entertaining, you know, in my writing as I try to be in person. And the only thing I really like about writing when I write on a blog or if I write an article for one of the gay rags in town or if I send, you know, put my two cents in on something on CarrieFairfield.com or any of the gay websites that are out there, I like to be very, very intelligent if I can. And the only thing I really like about when I can sit there and type it is I can think about what I'm saying, because there are times when I just don't have a filter, and for some reason the wrong word comes out of my mouth, and I think, oh, my God, I want to suck the words back in, but they're already out there for the world to hear. And that's how just my writing style.
I see. Well, in addition to the blog, have you written articles on some of the news blogs and that sort of thing? It seems like you'd be a great guest correspondent for something like Valerico Project.
I've sent in things to some of the gay rags around town and around the state, just putting in what I think about a certain subject. I mean, especially now we're getting into the election and all the politics. And right before you called me, I was watching Anderson Cooper, my husband, talk to all the Republican candidates, talking about how they want to beat Hillary. And I'm thinking, no, that woman has more testosterone in her body than half the lesbians I know, so they can't go after her. But
yeah, we were listening to that.
When we get into the more political things, and just when people are stupid, I mean, I'll be reading online, and somebody will just make a stupid statement. I'm done reading anything that Fred Phelps writes, because if you try to attack him, he just says, well, I've already touched on this issue, and that's really shuts it down. And I'm thinking, well, that's just a way to pussyfoot out of it, an issue, because I'd love to go head-to-head with him. But until that day comes, I read these people that make stupid, stupid statements, and I'm thinking, why would you even say something so dumb? Like, there was something on AOL the other day about how in Da Vinci's Last Supper is a beautiful song if you'd take their hands and their cups and their heads and plot them onto a musical scale. And I thought, well, isn't that neat? That's a neat way to look at it.
That's
well, somebody's on there talking about, well, God said blah, 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 and I just thought, oh, no. No, no, go away, little fag. No, this is not your day. I don't care if you found Jesus yesterday under a rock. It's music, and it's art, and that's something that should be kept separate from religion. I'm sorry.
Well, that is absolutely true, and that's an interesting thing. I guess he thought that particular painting was done back when Jesus was alive still.
Well, it's not like it's from, what's that movie, History of the World Part 1, Mel Brooks?
Yeah.
And he goes to, he's a waiter at the Last Supper, and he goes, Jesus, and Jesus keeps going, yes. I didn't say anything, Jesus, yes. And then, you know, Da Vinci comes in, and they make the painting right there. And that's one thing that I just don't understand about, like, the Da Vinci Code. For God's sakes, it's a book. It's a piece of fiction, and it's good reading. The chapters are small. You still have accomplished a lot when you read one of them. And at the end of it, the movie is pretty good, too. And, Catholic
so
Church,
funny.
Our dear Pope, he says we can't watch that. It's a mortal sin. Well, there's a lot of mortal sins going around, darling.
Yes, and it's so funny that you would bring that up. I, I made a reference to that a while back regarding the. You remember the whole bit about the Left Behind series and how popular that was with the right wing and
yeah.
and you know people yeah and it was all about the what is it not Armageddon but you know when people oh the rapture all about the rapture and people would you know get raptured out of their car right and they loved that and it was pure fiction it was just pure fiction that was okay they loved that but then the Da Vinci Code comes along and oh this is a sin you know and it's just religious fiction it just never I've never can wrap my head around how stupid some of these people are
you know and people never cease to amaze me especially when it comes to stuff like that Do you ever happen to watch Family Guy?
Yes, I have seen that. Yes, I have. I'm not regularly, but I've seen it.
I have my teeth set to record every show of it because I just think it's so funny. But there was one episode where he said, "Oh, the main character, his name's also Peter." He goes, "Oh, I feel so lonely. It's just I feel like Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell after the rapture, and here they are standing on a street with these big tumbleweeds going by." Well, who are we going to hate? He goes, I'm going to hate that rock. And Pat Robertson, no, I'm going to hate that rock. I hated that rock first, and then they just started making out. And that's, you know, if you're going to really try and just get under the skin of the right wing, the religious right, and, you know, anything else that thinks that they're just so right, that's the way to do it. I mean, Jerry Falwell, even though he's dead, and God rest his soul, because somebody needs to,
mm-hmm.
he did not do good things as a person. Neither did Ronald Reagan. I mean, the man never mentioned AIDS in any speech, and he could have. I'm not saying this with 100% certainty, but he could have stopped the rampant it's run now. He could have hit the brakes on it when it first was discovered, but he didn't. And people can sit there and say, you know, all these horrible things about people. Yeah, it's sad that they're dead. I don't want to be there. But you have to think about, you know, just what your legacy is going to be just in every little action you do, and the Pope that we have now is not anywhere near as fun as the Pope that we had, just because he'd do a little dance when his knee would start going out. And mm-hmm. then you have, you know, the Jerry Falwells of the world and Fred Phelps, and the people just never cease to amaze me with that stuff.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Falwell. I was just saying the other night, there's a quote when he was living, obviously, he was still drawing breath, there was a quote, and he was talking about fundraising for the Liberty University and all that, and how lucrative it is to put out these anti-gay tracts, and you say, you know, the homosexuals are taking over, and send us money to help, you know, kill the huge homosexual powerful lobby, blah blah blah. And he actually said, Adela, he actually said that if homosexuals didn't exist, we would have to create them, meaning that that Jerry Falwell of the church would have to create them as the demon to throw in people's faces to raise. Is that astounding? He actually said that.
That takes some gall. I mean, I understand that, you know, people think that we have this huge agenda. All we want to be is treated the same way as everybody else. We don't want to be the redheaded bastard stepchild. That's all it is.
I completely agree.
I'd love to turn on the news one day and have gay marriage not be an issue.
Wouldn't it be fine?
I would still want to turn on the TV and have this equality issues just done. Just have let it happen.
I completely agree. And, in fact, I often think to myself the object of this program is eventually to put this program out of business, simply because there's no need to shout.
Well, I think it's so funny in your intro, you said something about the homosexual agenda. And I thought, I just thought that was so funny because that's what, you know, people think this huge agenda and there's this huge problem. We're trying to get more people in the club so we can all get the toaster oven at the end of the day. And, you know, ooh, watch your children around that gay person because they're going to touch them and they're going to catch the gay and ooh, look out. No, don't be stupid.
Exactly. And the last thing I want in my house is somebody's kid. Jeez.
Right.
Get him out of here. Della, we have a caller. A caller, Jim, is on the line. He has a question about, I think he wants to talk to you about Divine. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
Miss Delicious, how are you?
I'm just wonderful. How are you?
Okay. Listen, tell me about how Divine influenced you.
Divine influenced me in that I've never seen. I mean, people talk about RuPaul and how RuPaul was just, you know, she was the be-all, end-all of drag. And that may be for now, or at least back in 1991 when Supermodel was big. But Divine was there years before. Divine was those movies, the John Waters movies, and you know, even with the thing with the dog poop, everything twists your mind before you get to that. And Divine would do things that nobody else would even think about doing and do it with a smile and took that all the way to the bank. And the thing I love about Divine was she made a joke of herself, and she cashed in on that so well, and she was the one laughing, even though she made herself the butt of the joke.
Well, she was quite a character. As a matter of fact, I had the opportunity to meet John Waters.
Oh, wonderful.
And he's a very interesting person, very unassuming, very quiet, very demure. And you would never know that he was, he and Divine went to high school together in Maryland.
Yes.
And as far as your John Waters movies are concerned, which is your favorite one? Or would you
Unfortunately, my favorite movie by John Waters is Serial Mom, and I'm sure Divine would have been in that had he lived. Otherwise, I loved Hairspray, just because I did this big Hairspray thing down in North Carolina in 2002 at the Miss USA at Large pageant. I was there with Leslie Ryan, and I played Divine, and so I had to watch that movie over and over again. And to hear about how, you know, her Tracy is a clean teen, and that movie to me was just fun because, A, it brings in, you know, drag and things that aren't normal in this society that wants everything to be so normal. And it also brings in the big girl, and the big girl wins at the end. And that's something that my heart is all about.
Tracy Turn Black.
Pardon me?
The character.
Say again?
Tracy Turn Black.
Tracy Turn Black.
Yes, Tracy. Good old Tracy. And Edna.
Yeah. I've asked Peter about this one, and I've been trying to get him to see it. It's called Lust in the Dust. Have you seen that?
Yes.
Kazan in it. That's
yeah,
all I
really recently
know.
Saw it. Jim recommended it, and I recently saw it, and I thought it was a hoot. and you're right. It was really quite amazing. And also, Jim, I should tell you that I hadn't seen Pink Flamingos in so many years. I went ahead and got that from Netflix, so I'm going to watch this weekend.
Well, I actually watched that movie, Pink Flamingos, and everybody warned me about the last scene, you know, with the dog poop. And everything that led up to it was so raping to my mind, with the chickens licking and the meat attached to the male genitalia. That scene at the end was nothing to me. And then I started watching Female Troubles because it was a box set. And when Divine started raping...
Oh, my God.
Divine as a man started raping Divine as a woman. And he burnt on the couch and started licking the newborn baby. I just turned off the TV. I was emotionally spent. It was like watching Two Girls, One Cup. I was just done. It was the end of it.
Do you remember her friend in that... the woman who played her mother, Edith Basti.
Yes. Eggs, Babs, eggs.
Well, I used to correspond with Edith Basti.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know what happened to her. She moved to Venice, California. And, you know, she would write these letters back, and she would start talking about that John was going to do Pink Flamingos forever. And then she would start writing about people kiting bad checks on her and stuff like that. But she was just a character in herself, particularly when she played Aunt Ida.
Uh-huh. And she's in that brassiere, covered in eggshells.
Oh, yeah. And then Aunt Ida and her son, Gator Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
And remember her little soliloquy with Gator about how she wanted Gator was straight, and she wanted Gator to be gay and all this stuff.
It yes.
Absolutely.
That whole movie is like it is full of so much wrongness that it's so right. It is so deliciously nasty. And Divine was so right saying, "I am the filthiest woman alive," because yes, honey, she was.
Well, Raymond and Connie Marvel were right behind her, I guess, as far as the people who were competing for her position as being the world's filthiest person. But I want to tell you, I spent a lot of time in New York, and this was in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you one experience that I had when that movie premiered was in the Elgin Theater. And the Elgin Theater that night, honest to God, I don't know which was more interesting, the audience themselves or the movie that was going on. So you can imagine a premiere movie like that in the in 1972, and they've had that on documentaries. It's just incredible.
Well, I'm sure that it was like watching, it'd be the another kind of Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well, yeah, it was.
Where people brought in their things and threw it all over the place. That, and I think that's something that really needs to be brought back. And there's so many things that are so fun and haven't been done for a while, and now they're just so kitschy that people want to get back into it. And I think that stuff like that's perfect to bring back old classics, cult classics,
right?
And just start getting into the whole cult phenomena.
Well, John Waters has really become almost mainstream now.
Mm-hmm.
He's really become quite large for somebody who started out in Baltimore. And I think the latest thing he did was, one of the latest things I saw, it's the Dirty Shame.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen that one?
No, actually I have not.
Well, I think you probably enjoy that too. I think it has Chris Isaac and, Patty Hearst is in it. He just has a whole retinue of people in there that seem to follow him.
And the thing I love about John Waters is he, not only does he come up with some of the best lines, but he uses so many people that you just wouldn't think to be in a movie like Patty Hearst with her white shoes after Labor Day.
Well, she's in there. Right. She gets bonked by, right. I don't know. Who kills her in that movie? I've forgotten now.
Kathleen Turner.
That's right, Kathleen.
She beat her to death with the phone. Nobody wears white after Labor Day. That was one of the classic lines. That and "Are those pussy willows, Dottie?" That was another just classic line from that movie.
Now, what was that? I'm sorry.
Oh, when she said, "Are those pussy willows, Dottie?"
Oh. Yeah.
That whole scene cracked me up.
Well.
It's Fabergé egg. These are movies that are just so phenomenal.
Well, a lot of those people have gone on, and they certainly made their influence. They had their influence on a lot of things. I've been trying to get Peter to admit to his name. You know, he has a drag name.
Really?
Uh-huh.
You must have heard me make some reference to that on a show one evening. Did I make a reference to Rufus Ann?
I christened you. You don't remember? Your name is because you're such a computer person. I called you Dot Matrix.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Oh, Lord.
Yes.
Everything's just coming out tonight.
Oh God, I'm supposed to be a little bit butch, Jim. I'm supposed to be like,
well,
it's not working out very
well. Oil when you're done.
Well, listen, it's very enjoyable talking with you. I wish you luck in your career. And
well, thank you very much.
And you take care and take care of yourself. And,
and you do the same. And keep on smiling.
All right, we'll try. Have a good night now.
You too, honey. Goodbye.
Thank you, Jim. And that was Jim. Jim is one of our regular callers, Della, and he's lived an interesting life. And I always tease him that he lives in an old Southern mansion in North Carolina, wearing the Carol Burnett drapes.
Oh my God, that would! And I wish there was a song that went along with that, because I would do that in a heartbeat. I think that's so funny.
It'd be so funny. He admits to the old Southern mansion, but he won't cop to the drapes.
Nothing wrong with wearing some drapes and a curtain rod just dancing around the house. That's how I dust usually. Either that or wearing fringe, one of the two.
I have to tell you, Della, you're a remarkable guest. I've been thrilled to have you, but I've been firing so many questions at you from left and right. There's probably something that maybe you'd like to say about your future plans or what's going on that I haven't even brushed on because I don't know to ask you. What's going on with you in the future? If I were not here, what would you say? Let's put it like that.
Well, you know, if you weren't here, I don't think I'd be saying anything because then I wouldn't have a show to talk on, would I? But the opportunity, like I said, is incredible. That I made a couple notes just as we were talking, and you said how you've had ministers and rabbis on. Well, I'm also the Reverend Delalicious. One night I got a little drunk and went online to one of those free sites and I ordained myself.
Oh, that's fabulous.
I've actually done a couple lesbian weddings here around the state.
What? And
that's something that I think it's funny to do because, you know, it means something to the couple. And it means something to me to be able to perform something. But it's more funny to me that I think that people have made such a mockery of religion and marriage with the whole gay marriage, straight marriage, man and man, woman, whatever. And people like Miss Britney Spears, who, you know, she treated marriage so well. And I think that this is a way to have a little spin on it and still feel like I'm doing something good for the community, whereas a lot of times people can sit there and bitch and moan about what's going on. I just like to smile and laugh and do that in any kind of adversity, if I'm having a great day or if I've just wrecked my car to a busload of nuns. And that is my philosophy in life.
There's always a busload of nuns coming around somewhere. You made a remark about in one of your articles that I read just here over the last couple of days, something about a busload of nuns. What was that you said? Do you recall that line? It was fabulously funny. I don't think I highlighted it.
Oh, was that on my MySpace?
Yes. I was reading through several. There's something about a busload of nuns. I wish I could spot it here.
I have so much fun with Catholic humor that I really can't remember what I like about nuns.
Yeah, it was
lock and load.
Yeah, it was priceless. It was priceless. I have a surprise for you. You mentioned, and I think in one of our emails we're talking about music. You mentioned Ethel Merman's disco album, and then you even mentioned. I think maybe you've done some of her songs during your shows.
Yes, I have. I think that if you haven't heard the album, that just to hear There's No Business Like Show Business and Songs from Gypsy, sung live by Ethel Merman to a disco beat, to me that just blows my mind. And it's so funny and it's so kitschy, but it's so steeped in just gay history. I love it.
Well, I have to tell you, I sincerely hope that you haven't heard this before, because this goes back to the vinyl days when I was DJing. It goes all the way back to a group that called DiscoNet. You've probably heard of them. They, you know, did remixes. They were huge in the 80s and the early 90s. I have a DiscoNet remix of Ethel Merman doing There's No Business Like Show Business.
Oh, nice.
And, I'm going to run it for you, for everyone to listen to now. And after you hear it, we'll chat for a minute. But I wanted to run that before we got too far into the program, because it runs about 10 minutes. And I'll make sure you get a copy of it after the fact, or in some way I'll get it to you. Send you an email with a link, because it's too good. But in any case, Bob, if you would run the DiscoNet remix of Ethel Merman doing There's No Business Like Show Business.
your business like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing, everything that traffic will allow. Nowhere could you get that happy feeling when you are stealing that extra bow. There's no people like show people. They smile when they are low. Even with a turkey that you know will fold, you may be stranded out in the cold, but still you wouldn't change it for a sack of gold. Let's go on with the show.
Let's go on with the show!
Stella, I hope you hadn't heard that before.
Oh, you know, as many different remixes of Ethel Merman as I've found, I've never heard that particular one, no. But I
praise
went singing
God,
along.
I did it. I did it. I played
it. When a 28-year-old man is sitting on his bed going, there's no business like show.
Oh,
but I
geez.
Love it. I absolutely love it.
I'll make sure
thank
you get
you
a copy
much. Of it. I would love a copy.
I'll make sure I'll send you a link and some of the and maybe you know some a shot of the album or whatever, and the albums are really they're just really rather plain. They're just you know they were DJ remixes back in the early 80s. I do want to ask. I don't want you to get away without my asking the thing about doing the lesbian weddings.
Mm-hmm.
Were they outdoors? Were they in homes?
No,
were they in parks?
The first one I ever did, I went to this small town outside of here that's known for being very, very backwoods. And as I drove there, hungover as hell in my car without air conditioning in the middle of the summer, wearing a wool suit because it was my finest, and drawing on eyebrows on the way, I thought, this is one of those days. And I drove to, it was a community center, a youth center, just in the middle of this town, where they didn't have air conditioning. And
uh-huh.
It was like, you would have thought San Francisco had just descended upon this town. There was so much fabulousness and fairy dust everywhere. And we did this wedding, and it was so touching because it was the first one I'd ever done. And these two women love each other so much. And one has two children from a previous marriage, and they were involved in the ceremony, and they had the unity candle, and they made sure everything was color coordinated and put together. It wasn't like you would think stereotypically a whole bunch of lesbians and in jeans and cut off flannels chain smoking while touching up their mullets. I mean, it was just a beautiful, very 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 feminine ceremony, and I got to be the big queer standing up there with my eyebrows painted on, reading off the whole mess that they typed up for me. But it was so nice to be involved and to be able to kind of thumb my nose at society and say, screw y'all, we're doing this whether it's legal or not. We're going to have a good time. And then we partied. It was lovely.
Had they been together for many years and
yes,
always wanted to? I see. I often see articles about, people who, have gone to Canada. In fact, Del, you'll probably be interested in this. My guess... Friday evening, if you have a chance to listen, or you can actually always go back to the archive if you're interested in hearing. It's a couple who have been together 62 years. They're probably the couple that's been together the longest in the world. I mean, quite frankly, there's no way to keep. They've been together 62 years. Their names are Gus and I'm sorry, I don't have his name in front of me. Gus and he'll kill me probably. I hope he's not listening, but I'll find it in a second. Gus and somebody. I'll tell you who in a second. And in any case, Gus and Elmer. Yes, Gus and Elmer. And they met back in the war, and they have been together ever since. They met each other. I think their eyes met there at the I think it was in New York somewhere. They were walking down the street, and their eyes met, and they fell in love, and they've been together 62 years. And,
my last relationship lasted 62 minutes. That's fabulous. That is absolutely wonderful.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, Della, you have been, again, a remarkable guest. I have certainly enjoyed having you on the show. And thank you so much for taking the time out to do this with us this evening. It's very gracious of you. I know you have a busy schedule.
Well, Peter, I enjoyed myself thoroughly. And there's a link to my MySpace on website, and I encourage anybody out there that wants to just get a good giggle or whatever. By the way, I did find what I typed about nuns.
Oh, good.
And it was about the Jehovah's Witnesses. And we come to my door at 11:15 in the morning, and I said on there that you don't discuss religion with any desire to convert a Catholic, because I have that fear that a stealth bus full of nuns will descend on my house and attack me with rulers.
That was it. So
that was
a bus full of nuns beating you with rulers. Oh, you are such a wit. I gotta hand it to you. You really got a lot of the ball, Della. I really appreciate your being. Don't be a stranger. You're welcome to call. You don't have to have an appointment. Just call any time. You see the numbers there on the site. We'd always love to hear from you. Anything that's going on, just give us a ring.
Well, I will definitely do that. And thank you and all your listeners for putting up with me for the past hour and a half. I had an absolutely wonderful time.
And so did I, and so did they. Thank you so much, and good evening to you.
Thank you, Peter. Good night.
Good night. And that was Delalicious. And as I explained to you earlier at the beginning of the show, he's not just any old queen. He is the Imperial Highness of Indiana. We'll have to take it one state at a time. He's a handful. You gotta love a guy like that. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to pretend it's the top of the hour, and it's not. It's 10:38, nowhere near the top of the hour, but we're going to pretend it is, and we're going to cut to the news and take a little break, and I'll have a sip of something to drink. And so as we come up on the break, I'm Peter Godbold. This is Strictly Confidential, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back. Okay, maybe we're not going to go to the news. Okay, maybe not. Okay, oh, I see. Bob was clearing the Della call. I'm sorry, Bob. You're probably saying good night to Della. I didn't mean to do that. I was just saying let's take a top of the hour at 10:38, pretend it's top of the hour news break, and I'll wet my whistle. Thank you, Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. 6,000 Sunni Arab residents of Iraq will join a security pact with American forces in what U.S. military officials term a critical step in securing any remaining escape routes for members of al-Qaeda flushed from extremist strongholds. The new alliance is being called the single largest volunteer mobilization since the war began. In response to this week's Middle Eastern Peace Conference in Annapolis, Maryland, Iran's top leader predicts the demise of Israel as a nation and calls the summit a failure. Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was not invited to the conference. He says no agreement, though, is complete without inclusion of Hamas leaders concerning any future Palestinian state. President Bush, meantime, is asking for the world's support for future peace negotiations between Israeli and Palestinian leaders. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas are both on their way back home after reaching an historic agreement to settle differences concerning a future Palestinian state by late next year. A federal grand jury has begun hearing testimony in the September killing of 17 Iraqi citizens by Blackwater private security guards. In addition, the families of several victims have filed a federal lawsuit against Blackwater USA. U.S. airstrikes over eastern Afghanistan killed at least 14 local members of a road crew working on a highway. U.S. military authorities say the bombings were based on faulty intelligence. President Pervez Musharraf officially left as head of the Pakistani army today. He'll be sworn into his second term as president tomorrow. Martial law remains in effect. Talks about the future of Kosovo have broken off between Serbian and Kosovar leaders meeting in Austria. Both sides threatening violence should Kosovo declare its independence next month. CT scans are putting more Americans at increased cancer risk. A new study published in the New England Journal of Medicine indicates that in a few decades, as many as 2% of all cancers in the U.S. may be caused from radiation from CT scans being given now. Some medical experts say the statistics may be overly alarming, but efforts are being made to curb the diagnostic X-ray use in children and young adults. You're listening to the Quality News Network, back after this message.
Remember when the name on the door said it all? In today's world, it's the website that defines a company's image. For better or worse, a company's presence on the internet is a vital factor in how it keeps existing customers and attracts new clients. Byte Technology of Monterey is a leader in a new approach to web design. Byte designs a new site based on the mission, purpose, character, and indeed the energy of their clients. Fight is particularly successful in presenting their client's name to the global internet community because they approach the design with a clear, defined process. By fully understanding the client's business, motivation, and operation, they are able to translate the company's critical values into the new website. In addition to original design, Byte works with clients to update their website to reflect changes in target markets, products and services, and the business climate. Byte Technology. See what they're about at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Under public and political pressure, R.J. Reynolds has agreed to stop advertising its tobacco products in newspapers and magazines by next year. In Wisconsin, federal prosecutors have abandoned an effort to force Amazon.com to release the names of thousands of people who buy used books online. That after a federal judge ruled customers have a constitutional right to keep private their reading habits. The FCC has rejected a plan to place the country's cable TV companies under tighter government control. The plan would have forced greater program diversity upon cable stations. The publisher of the Wall Street Journal, Dow Jones, saying it plans to sell 23 daily and weekly newspapers it owns in seven states. Dow Jones is to be acquired by Rupert Murdoch's News Corp. That's within the next few weeks. Consumer confidence fell this month to its lowest level in 2 years, analysts blaming record-setting oil prices and the ever-deepening housing slump. Meantime, Americans spent $733 million online Monday for holiday gifts, and that's a 21% increase over this time last year. Light sweet crude oil trading at $90.62 a barrel at today's close of Wall Street. The Dow way up 331 points to end at 13,289. NASDAQ up 82 points. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And welcome back, not to the second hour, but to the last 15 minutes of Strictly Confidential. You know, I was still laughing at Della during the break there. I was talking about the show upcoming with Gus and Elmer, who've been together for 62 years, and he whips out, "Oh, that's really impressive. My last relationship was 62 minutes. Thought that was priceless." I should tell you about the other guests that we're having this week. Tomorrow night we're having one of our music guests. In fact, we're having two of our music guests tomorrow evening. We will have Ernest Cole back with us. You'll remember Ernest is a wonderful guest who, international recording star, great tracks, they're on all the dance charts, and also played Frankenfurter in the Rocky Horror Picture Show on Broadway. And he will be bringing along with him Steve Skinner. And I'm looking forward to talking to both of them. Steve Skinner is a legend in the dance biz, in the disco biz. He's a remarkable DJ and remixer. And Steve Skinner is working with Ernest on one of his current projects, So I'm looking forward to having them on tomorrow night. And it's Gus and Elmer for Friday night. Little story I want to tell you here. And this story catches my eye because I know this man. In fact, he's been to visit me here on the dirt road in the middle of nowhere. This was approximately 300 years ago when Dr. Frank Kameny came out to visit. I was back when I was involved with the Gay Liberation Front. That puts it probably in the late 60s, maybe early 70s, when he came here. There's a group from the Gay Liberation Front. We all came up to the house here, and I remember my mother was living then, and she cooked us all. I think we had like turkey or something. We had sandwiches outdoors and iced tea, and you know, it was all very Southern. It was all very fabulous. And Dr. Frank Kameny was a guest. Kameny is actually one of the founding fathers of the gay rights movement. He's been around since before there was a Gay Liberation Front, all the way back to something called the Mattachine Society. Some of you may know, have heard of the Mattachine Society. And he's the one who coined the slogan, "Gay is Good," which people were chanting back around 1968. And he's a remarkable man. I'd like to get him on the show. In fact, if you'd like to read more about him, you can Google the Kameny Papers Project, and he spells his name K-A-M-E-N-Y. Dr. Frank Kameny. And I'll make an effort to get him on the show. I'm sure he'd be surprised to hear a voice of the past. I'm sure he'll remember it. I mean, you don't get drug out in the middle of nowhere very often for iced tea and turkey sandwiches. So I think, you know, him being a city kind of guy, I think he'll probably remember that. So in any case, Tom Brokaw has written a book here. It's just been released, and they're talking about it. So let's see, what is the title of this book? It's called Boom! With an exclamation point. Boom! Voices of the 60s, Personal Reflections on the 60s and Today. So this is Tom Brokaw's personal account of the 1960s and his retrospective of it. It includes Vietnam and the civil rights movement and all the different things that went on during the 60s. You remember the 60s was quite an era. If you didn't live through it, you've no doubt read about it. The Flower Children and the anti-war movement and the whole bit. But the thing about it is that somehow Tom Brokaw has managed to completely scrub anything gay from this book at all, as if the gay movement did not exist during the 1960s. His book, Voices of the 60s, just simply deletes the entire events of the whole decade, whereas he talks about he talks about women's rights. He talks about black people trying to get emerging, then there was Martin Luther King. All those things are brought up, but somehow he managed to completely scrub it. And anyway, Dr. Frank Kameny was not particularly pleased with this, and I don't blame him a bit. And Kameny would be the one to call him on it, because Kameny was there and he lived through it. Kameny wrote him a long letter. It's been published. Kameny says so many things here. He says, as a gay combat veteran of World War II and therefore a member of the Greatest Generation, which is, of course, mentioned in the book, I find myself and my fellow gays as absent from your narration as if we did not exist. We find your book all about a multitude of issues and the vast cultural changes of the era, but not a single mention of gays and homosexuality, only dead silence about the gay movement. And Dr. Frank Kameny goes on to say that it's just inconceivable he'd do that. He said, he points out in 1965, there was right in the middle of the period of time that Brokaw is writing about, commenced a huge bringing about of gays and the issues out of the closet. There were demonstrations then, picketing at the White House. You can't imagine that anymore. I mean, you'd be Gitmo'd. There were demonstrations and picketing of other government sites. There was an annual 4th of July demonstration at Independence Hall in Philadelphia by gay rights groups. This was all in the 60s. In fact, the Smithsonian Institute displayed the original pickets, the signs, last month in the Smithsonian. He points out that in 1963, suddenly millions of people were suddenly made well. We were very, very sick, and suddenly, boom, we're well. This is because it was beginning in 1963, actually, it began then. There was a decade-long effort to reverse the psychiatric categorization, of gays being mentally ill and emotionally disturbed and the whole bit. And it concluded in the early 70s, but with the mass cure of all of us. So that whole thing was going on very vividly and very strongly all through the 60s. The gay rights movement occurred in a huge way in 1969. That's when the Stonewall Rebellion took place in New York. They rioted. I've talked about it on the show. They rioted for 3 days, and it was mostly the transgendered and the drag queens that did that. We owe them we pretend like we want to hide them under the bushel because we're ashamed of them because they don't present their gender the way people expect to be presented. But hell, we owe them a debt of gratitude. Frankly, they were the ones that went out and rioted over this thing. Also, in the 60s, there was the whole beginning of the assault on the anti-sodomy laws that made technical criminals of every single one of us, and that began in 1961 and went all the way through the 60s. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. But Brokaw is like, didn't exist. Kameny is saying he ought to do a public apology, or at least when the next issue of the book comes out, an addendum or something. So in any case, Brokaw made some sort of a statement that, here we go. He says, Brokaw said in a recent CNN appearance, says the gay rights movement came later. And he didn't intend to slight the movement by not including it. It's just that it didn't happen in the 60s. according to Tom Brokaw. We've talked about history and gay history on this show and LGBT history. In fact, we had the museum in San Francisco, the LGBT museum, and I think Kameny would be a wonderful resource. And I am definitely going to try and contact that guy. He is getting on. He's getting up there, but he's sharp as a tack. In fact, it was in 1961 too. There was a long line of court cases about the U.S. Civil Service gay ban, which was, it was much worse than the "Don't Ask, Don't Tell" thing back then, which that went all the way through 1961 up to around 75. So as if Tom Brokaw, as if, can you believe that? This guy is like the news guy. He was reporting this stuff. He knew this stuff was going on. Very idea. So I'll try and get Dr. Kameny on the show. I'm sure he will have an interesting perspective of having iced tea and I think it was turkey sandwiches. I honestly don't remember. There were a whole bunch of us out here. And we were. But that was when I was a young child, a little baby advocate with my little pink hatchet. And I want to share this with you too, just briefly. You know, we've had several of the ex-gay folks on recently. In fact, last night and then approximately a week ago. And of course, that central thing about the ex-gay theory is that, and they don't talk about the women much. You know, that's always the case. It's always the men. They're the ones that's important. So anyway, they're saying that, you know, the male turns gay because of a poor relationship with dad, and then a sensitive boy perceives his parents disapproved, and so he gets defensive and rejects dad and all things masculine, and mother supports the child, and then the child doesn't want to participate in sports and all this because it's all masculine, you know, it's all blah, blah, blah. But of course, it completely ignores the fact that many gay men have had terrific relationships with their fathers, and many heterosexual men have had disastrous relationships with their fathers. I mean, you could shoot holes all over the place. And the thing about sports, how about Billy Bean? He can hit a baseball 100 miles an hour, professional baseball player, and he's a gay man. So, you know, none of this stuff holds any water. But I got to tell you about this group. It's Wayne Benson, and it's a nude adventure. God, this is so disturbing. I have a couple minutes to tell. I'll get through it quickly. They realize they're not really succeeding with, like, you know, the ex-gay thing with the prayer and the therapy. So what they're doing is they're outsourcing. They're sending the folks to a paramilitary pseudo-psychological thing. It's called the Mankind Project. It's one of the ex-gay programs. It's also hooked up with something called Jews Offering New Alternatives to Homosexuality. It's Jonah. So anyway, it's a cult-like national program. It's $650 a week, and you go to a boot camp. And the participants there are both straight and gay. And they're greeted by a large, like an intimidating crowd of men dressed in dark clothing, and their faces are painted black. And the men are forced to take cold showers and survive on 4 hours of sleep at night, and they subsist on very little food. And then they have meetings and activities like you shave, like one man will shave the other man's face. This is supposed to, like, you know, make you comfortable with masculinity. And then they have to change clothes together. And the idea is to get them in touch with feelings and heal wounds, et cetera, et cetera. Here are some of the things they do. Blindfolded walking tours in the nude. People blowing sage smoke in the face of men while 50 or so naked men dance around them. Men sitting in a circle discussing their sexual histories while they pass around a wooden dildo called the cock. Naked men beating cooked chickens with hammers. You can't make this stuff up. I am serious as a heart attack. So also there's one aspect that a person is reporting. There's one thing they do. Everybody sits in a circle like Indian style, you know, your legs crossed, and it's like in a lodge. And the man leading the group says, "If you wish, you may reach over and grab your brother's dick." Serious. "If your brother doesn't want your hand there, he can remove it." Now, what is that? You know, this whole thing is just getting so damn desperate. I just can't. I honest to God, I didn't make any of that up. I will have to ask Dr. Kameny about that. But anyway, I do definitely want you to listen tomorrow night. It'll be a great show with Ernest and Steve Skinner and then Gus and Elmer. And again, the Head On Radio Network main site, headonradionetwork.com, we have the PayPal button there. If you're able to participate with us and help us to keep the network on the air, you can do that by sending us a few bucks, and it pays for things like the stream and the T1 line and all the electronics that we have to do. And we have, I need to tell you that there's no John show tonight. John is not able to do his midnight show, so that will be a rerun. And in addition, there is the horn section, which we normally, because John can't participate with myself and Bob, we're not going to do the horn section this evening. So at the end of this show, in just a few minutes, that will take us to the last live program on the Head On Radio Network this evening that we'll go into rerun after that. And what a great night. I had a ball. It was fun talking to Della. I'm glad to have you along with me. And it's more news every day. Just never stops. So keep tuned in. You are appreciated. And in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you too.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Well, lovers and dancers watch Catherine Wheel and argue realities didn't learn heels in a world that's...
This is the Quality News Network. There's been an historic breakthrough in diplomatic efforts between Israeli and Palestinian leaders with the help of the White House. Israeli and Palestinian leaders agreeing to revive long-stalled peace talks starting early next month, making an independent Palestinian state a possibility. Speaking from today's Middle Eastern Peace Conference at Annapolis, Maryland, President Bush read a joint statement drafted by Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, who say discussions could begin next month with full agreement reached by late next year. In Hebron, West Bank, a protest against the peace talks brought clashes between those loyal to Palestinian leader Abbas and Islamists who called him a traitor. Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf said goodbye to his troops today. He's expected to officially resign tomorrow as head of the country's army. He'll be sworn in as civilian president then on Thursday. Six unarmed Iraqi civilians were killed by U.S. forces north of Baghdad in the past 48 hours. A suicide bomber disguised as a shepherd blew himself up near a Baghdad checkpoint, killing 9 Iraqi policemen. The defense ministers of South and North Korea held a landmark meeting today to discuss resolution of a long-standing border dispute in the West Sea. NFL star safety Sean Taylor died of a gunshot wound today after being shot by an intruder at his home near Miami, Florida. The 24-year-old played for the Washington Redskins. He was their first pick in the 2004 NFL draft. Texas oil man's